Okay, thank you very much. This presentation is on grazing cover crops and the impact on cotton rooting and yield. We do have, Florida is generally not known for much of anything, maybe except oranges and beaches, but we are number 10 in the country in cattle numbers, mostly cow-calf. So we do have, along with the row crops that we have, and even though cotton and peanuts, we have 120,000 acres or so of cotton and had 200,000 acres of peanuts this year. They rank about 50 or 60 in value in the state of Florida because we do have so many other crops. We have been in a had a long-term rotation study comparing what we call a conventional rotation. On the right-hand side there, 2 years of cotton followed by peanuts, as compared to 2 years of a perennial grass followed by peanuts and then cotton. We do promote conservation tillage. A lot of our growers do use cover crops, but they're always hesitant because they say, well, does it really pay? Even though it may pay for preventing erosion and other things, you know, they don't, in a lot of cases, they don't put a lot of effort into it. They may not plant it timely, and then it may not add that much value. However, if you ask any of our growers, our watermelon growers, tomato growers, peanut growers, soybean growers, what they would rather plant crops behind, it is always behind the perennial grasses. They'll look for bahia grass up further north than tobacco country. It may be behind fescue, but we have found many advantages to planting behind the perennial grasses, and I want to show you some data that we have gotten on grazing cattle. We in this study, we are in the 12th year. We have compared the conventional to the the perennial grass rotation, the irrigated, non-irrigated. We've shown many of the values. We also, at the Mariana site, have a 160-acre center pivot that we have actually established the rotation with the perennial grasses. You will see it here. Cotton, winter grazing had been grazed out, cotton strip-tilled into it. On the right-hand side over here, peanuts that was planted into bahia grass that had been killed out, and winter grazing had been planted into that before peanuts were strip-tilled into that. The bahia, too, going into the second year of bahia grass, and then bahia 1, which was planted into the winter grazing for that year. In the winter, we to test the impact of cattle, and we have seen over the years that cattle do impact the soil physical properties. They will, at least in the top 6 inches, we get compaction. We were very concerned about that with peanuts because peanuts peg into the soil. So these points were GPSed. When we first started, we had 45 cow-calf pairs in this 160-acre farming system. We're up to 75 cow-calf pairs right now. We often run another 100 head of winter stockers in this because this is a beef unit, and like other farming situations, if you need grazing, you put the cattle wherever they can go to get grazing. So this is a pretty, compacted area. If you want to have a lot of foot traffic on it, we do with the number of cattle that we're running. The way it's set up in here, the exclusion cages, we do have exclusion cages in each of the quadrants, that any time the cattle are in those quadrants, the fences are up. We do have an exclusion cage in the dry corners because we wanted to determine the impacts of cattle on the crops in non-irrigated conditions as well. After we get through grazing, we do take down the fences from these exclusion areas so that we can strip till and use regular farm equipment across the entire area. You see in the background where the cattle are, an exclusion cage back there. We have, with the students and postdocs that we have had, we have taken a lot of data over the years and many, many different things. We have found a lot of value in the system. One of the main things that we have had a tough time convincing farmers is why he would want to rent farmland for $100 or $150 an acre and put it in grass. But we do have an economic model, and when you look at the yield and the economics of the system, it looks good. In the smaller plots, this is very typical of what you will see in the May, early June period. You plant, and in the non-irrigated areas, it comes up very slowly. This is early June, irrigated and non-irrigated. Early July, the same system on the top. You see the peanut, 2 years of cotton followed by peanuts, strip-tilled, zero nitrogen, 60 pounds per acre of nitrogen. There is a reason that we kept reducing nitrogen down to these levels. And then in the Bahia rotation with the cover crops, you see what happens, especially here. The crops do grow much faster and more robust in these systems behind Bahia grass. With cover crops and conservation tillage, it does conserve what we have, and we know that. We have a lot of blow-in sands in our part of the country. We also have a lot of erosion. We often have rainfall events that are 5 inches in an hour or 2 hours or whatever it might be. The sod-based rotation does restore what's been lost, and a lot of that is organic matter. We have yearly taken soil samples down to a meter deep so that we can determine not only physical properties of the soil, but the chemical properties as well and what's happening. Over the 12-year period, what we have seen is that we have increased organic matter in this Bahia rotation with cover crops by about a tenth of a percent per year. This may not sound like very much, but when you go from a little over 1% to a little over 2%, you store a lot more nutrients, a lot more water. The physical conditions of the soil are very dramatically then. When we have looked at the cattle impacts on these cover crops then at Mariana, where the cattle are, you will notice on the dotted lines here on the right, the non-irrigated is black, the irrigated is in blue. That's with cattle, and then without cattle on the left-hand side. The cattle do recycle a lot of nutrients that is available to the crop in that same year. If you look at potassium, and Bill talked about the price of nitrogen, the price of all of the nutrients have gone up dramatically. But again, you see here that in the top 6 to 12 inches, we've got twice as much potassium that was recycled in that top foot of soil as compared to where the cattle had not grazed inside those cages. When you start looking at those impacts, if you take nitrogen and potassium, some of the calcium, magnesium, some of the minor elements, the cattle are recycling at today's prices about $120 worth of nutrients, keeping it in that top foot of the soil profile, which can make a tremendous amount of difference. Also, it has made a difference in the amount of nitrogen that we have applied to this production field. So we wanted to find out about the rooting. We did put in the many rhizotron tubes inside and outside the cages. I would have shown them in the cotton field behind here, but the cotton, it grows up. You can't see the tubes as easily. To look at the rooting throughout the growing season, they are put in the row. A camera system is used. We, over a three-year period, we took 20,000 images in the dry corners as well as the irrigated areas to determine the root growth and the total amount of mass. Here is just with peanuts, which is what we plant after winter grazing, after the bahia grass. If you look at the root mass, it's over three times the amount where it had been grazed, and this totally surprised us because we thought cattle would maybe inhibit rooting of row crops. For all of those you folks who like to see this out of the Midwest with grain combines, these are peanut pickers in a peanut field in Florida. Not normally what you see. But with cotton, we saw a similar trend, and again, this was the second year after bahia grass, but it was after winter grazing, after the peanuts. Again, we see almost double the root mass. In the top 15 centimeters, very little difference in the rooting, but as you go down through the soil profile, again, this was 20,000 images of roots from this over a three-year period. If you look at cotton yields, what impact did it have on cotton yields? In 2007 was the first year that we put in the cages so that cattle were not would not be in those exclusion areas. On the two right-hand bars are the non-irrigated, grazed and non-grazed, and we saw a little bit of difference, and we thought, okay, it may have some potential there. In 2008, again, if you will look at the grazed and non-grazed, there was almost 450 pounds of lint difference where cattle grazed, and that gave us a lot of, we said maybe we have something here, and the yields of the non-irrigated were actually as high as the irrigated non-grazed, and no difference there. In the following years, we have seen a significant difference. In 2009, again, with the dry land, the non-irrigated grazed gave us a higher yield. Again, in 2010, it was not significantly different. But over those 4 years, we have averaged 200 pounds of lint more, and only about 25% of our cotton in Florida is irrigated. So we think that, at least for us, that our non-irrigated farmers who have cattle can benefit from this greatly. In 2011, the entire 40-acre field with 60 pounds of nitrogen per acre averaged 2,250 kilograms per hectare, about 4 3/4 bales of cotton. The farmer that farms this with us said, you know, there must be something to this. So to summarize this, we do use less nitrogen. We're only using 60 pounds per acre of nitrogen. We do get higher yields, especially in the dry, non-irrigated. And for those growers who don't have cattle, you might want to consider inviting your neighbors in, putting cattle on there, because there are some benefits. With that, thank you.